Repeat, everybody. You need to unmute my. There we go.
No worries. Thanks, Mark. Yeah, so this is going to be a kind of a tour of the last 2 years of my attempts at sobriety, and kind of some of the books and podcasts and meetings and all other things that have kind of helped along the way. So yeah, it's been 2 years since I've been given this sobriety thing, a red hot go. And I'm currently on day 134 of continuous sobriety to show you how that's going. Yeah, I know the kind of AA thing is to say, to count your days exactly but I don't know. For me, I feel like the 2 whole years is really part of the story, the shit I learned in the first kind of 7 months of sobriety has absolutely helped this time around. So yeah, it was probably late 2021 when I hit my first rock bottom, my first true rock bottom. But it wasn't my last rock bottom. I'd been kind of playing with matches for many years until I finally decided to burn my life to the ground in late 2021. And within a few months, I'd kind of lost everything, all my friends and my family and a whole bunch of other things. And I guess I should say trigger warning. I was, I was pretty dark, pretty terrible time, and had a couple of suicidal thoughts and even attempted a couple of times. But the weird thing was, I didn't go through with it, not because I didn't have the urge. I didn't want other people to know that I'd killed myself. Every time I thought about it, it just felt too shameful to let people know that that's what had happened to me. So that was the only reason I kind of stayed alive. But I didn't want to be alive, but I didn't want to kill myself either. So it was just basically that's when I guess I graduated from problem drinker to full-blown alcoholic. Although at the time, I wouldn't have accepted that word, and I didn't even believe that that was my actual issue. I just thought I was drinking too much and I needed to rein it in. But the one thing I knew more than anything at that time, was there was no way on earth you'd get me into an AA meeting. I just thought, fuck that. Like there were, in my mind, there were a bunch of crazy fundamentalist weirdos from America, and had nothing for me. So yeah, when I first started trying to help myself, because I did it all by myself at first, I joined this app called Daybreak, and look, I wouldn't recommend it to be honest, because it's only free for Australian users. And so if you're in Australia, yeah, maybe check it out. But I definitely wouldn't pay for this app. It's a terrible app in terms of like just technically wise, it's a absolutely ugly looking app. But there, it basically is like an online forum for people who are trying to change the way they drink. And there was a lot of I don't know. I found some benefit in that, in kind of like getting on every day and chatting with other people and seeing other people, get some days up and seeing people fail. And I don't know. There was that kind of community there. And but like I said, I'm really, really I don't know. I could not recommend it to people because it can be really, really triggering and awful at times. Just because there's pretty much no moderation. Like people will say really fucking depressing stuff, and if you're not in the right headspace, it can really make you feel even worse, I think. So anyway, but but for whatever reason, that became my kind of lifeline, and I started using that app quite a bit. And the next thing that I found in my, I guess, was a podcast, and this is from Australia as well. It's called the Sober Awkward Podcast. I'll throw all of these links in some notes at the end of this, by the way. But feel free to ask me in the chat as well. But yeah, Sober Awkward is just a wonderful, wonderful podcast. Hosted by two expats, so yeah, two British women who were living in Australia. And the thing that really was eye-opening about that one was they actually made sobriety sound fun. Like they were a really wonderful kind of there was wonderful chemistry between the hosts. The show is still going, but there's a new host now, and I don't know, it's kind of lost the charm for me. The original I guess the chemistry between the two original hosts was just wonderful. And what also made it super special for me at the time was Lucy, which one of the co-hosts, and she's the one who's left. She was very new to sobriety as well, so there were quite a few times where, she'd be really quite raw about some new thing that had just happened, or like, her first Christmas or her first birthday. Sober. You really got these kind of, in real time, raw versions of how she was feeling, and that I found that really, really powerful. So I don't know if you want to check out Sober Awkward. I think they're up to like episode 200 now. But yeah, I would definitely recommend going right back to the start and listening from the first episodes, because yeah, I just think the chemistry is wonderful between the original hosts. Yeah, so really, that they were the two main things. Like I said, I was doing it completely by myself, and I was in that period where I just didn't want to ask for help. I didn't, that was the next level of being an alky, is like having to ask someone else for help. And so these two things were, things I could hide on my phone. No one knew that I was listening to a sober podcast, and nobody knew that I was browsing a sober forum at work when I was doing it on my phone. And so yeah, so they were those two kind of anchors when I first started. And I think from there I got into Quitlet, which I only realized a little while ago is not a term that is universally known in the sober community. So Quitlet is quit literature. I thought everyone knew that. But yeah. So I got into a whole bunch of, oh, my cat wants to interrupt. Sorry. I got into a whole bunch of quit lit at the time. And yeah, the first book that really, really helped, and for all of this, by the way, I used a Kindle. I think that was probably the one of the best purchases in my recovery was the Kindle and the cat. They both serve different purposes, but yeah, the Kindle really was just, again, it was being able to read those things without anyone else knowing what I was reading, because I was reading some pretty fucking dark stuff. And I don't know, I don't want to be one of those guys reading the big book on the train, but if you're reading it on a Kindle, no one knows. But anyway, I Yeah, so I, the first r big book that really, really, not big book, the first book that really got to me was Annie Grace, which was what, This Naked Mind, which I really, really loved it. It just kind of explained really simply, in really simple terms, kind of like how she, decided, fuck, I've got a problem, and here's how I'm going to deal with it. And it's funny actually, now I've seen now that, like, Annie, pun intended, has kind of fallen out of grace recently. Like, people think that she's I've seen people describe her as too American or too self-helpy, or or too, toxic positivity and shit like that. And she might be on YouTube. I know she's got like a whole YouTube empire these days, and but I've never really kind of delved into that side of her. But I do think her book, This Naked Mind, is really fucking great. So, yeah, check it out if you haven't read it yet, and if you're kind of new to this. These days, everyone seems to recommend Alcohol Explained by William Porter, which I actually found to be really a bit too dry. So I don't know, we're all, unique snowflakes. So, we'll check them both out and see which one you bond with more. But yeah, for me, This Naked Mind was just a little bit more fun to read, I think. And again, that's kind of what I was really looking for at that point of like, I was so terrified that like, being sober would be the most boring thing in the world. That anyone who could kind of describe sobriety with a little bit of fucking fun, that's what I was kind of looking for, and it kind of shows in some of the titles I ended up reading after that. So, Glorious Rock Bottom was another book that I really really enjoyed. Again, kind of had a really fun and really good sense of humor when it came to recovery. So it starts in a detox and. And, there's some absolutely, terrifying bits in it, but she maintains a positive outlook and a sense of humor throughout the whole thing. There's the Unexpected Joy of Being Sober. I enjoyed that. Didn't like the ending, but eh. Anyway, High Sobriety was another one that's by an Australian author. That's quite good. It's a very, very quick read. We Are the Luckiest. Yeah, I was starting to get into that kind of too American, too self-helpy kind of with that one, but still a nice title. The one I really love these days, and it's absolutely not fun in any way, which maybe shows where I am these days in my sobriety, but is a book called Drinking: A Love Story. And that is just so well written, like one of the best books I've read, full stop. And just an incredible look at sobriety and kind of high functioning alcoholism and just how good denial can be, how strong denial can be. Yeah, so Drinking: A Love Story, if there's one book that you take from this talk, yeah, definitely get that one on your list. I just absolutely loved it. I even read there was an Iron Man set of comics where Tony Stark realizes he's an alcoholic. I think it was like a four comic series. And I even tracked that one down and threw it on the iPad, and that was quite entertaining as well. It was very very 60s and very sexist, but still pretty amazing to read a comic about an alcoholic. So that was good fun. But anyway, yeah. So that was they were all the things that kind of helped along the way as I was determined to kind of get sober all by myself and not have anyone else kind of not join any meetings and do any of that kind of stuff. And that lasted for a little while. I ended up doing a home detox. So it was a 6 week detox. But yeah, completely at home, completely over Zoom. It was 9 to 5 every weekday. And they did have a kind of harm minimization bent to the whole thing. But they did ask you to stay sober throughout the 6 weeks of the program. When I signed up, I was about a week sober. I mean, I'd signed up months before, but there was a wait list. But by the time it came around, yeah, I'd been about a sober for a week. And so I joined this 6 week program, and it was hilarious because it was like I said, they wanted you to stay sober throughout the whole thing, and I did, but it wasn't because I reckon looking back, like I stayed sober throughout the whole thing because at the time I was such a fucking people pleaser and such a teacher's pet But I wanted to make sure that I smashed fucking this course better than anyone. You know, I was going to be the sober little boy who got the gold star at the end of the course. And so, you know, that was my main motivation to stay sober throughout the 6 weeks. And yeah, and so I did, and that went well. And in the last week of the detox, somehow, like by that stage, I'd been unemployed for a couple of months, and I was pretty sure I was unemployable. And towards, yeah, in the last week of that detox, I ended up getting this job that was a very well-paid job, and yeah, working at a hospital, and I don't know, just so yeah, I'd completed this 6 week course completely sober. I'd gotten all my gold stars from, you know, all of the teachers that said, oh, what a, you know, great little participant I'd been. And then I got this fucking job. So like I was cured. It was great. You know, it was fucking couldn't be better. And so yeah, I went straight back to this, you know, very stressful, high paid job. And I was just losing my mind. And, you know, like, you know, these days I know, because I have been to AA now, spoiler. But these days, like, you know, I know that the AAs would say that I was a dry drunk at this point and I was white knuckling it. And I fucking hate both of those expressions. There's like I get where they're coming from, but I just think that there's so much language in AA that is really unhelpful sometimes. That kind of others you unless you're fully into the program. But we'll get to that later. But anyway, yeah. So like by their definition, I was dry drinking, dry drinking. I don't know, whatever, you know what I mean. I was a fucking mess either way. So I was going to work every day and I was just like, I was the, you know, the best little worker you could ever meet. Super polite, on time every morning. And then I just, you know, walk into the fire escape and have a 10-minute cry, and then just get back to my desk and you know send some email and you know so I was not doing well at all, but I thought that I was kind of at least I was getting back into society, and I kind of felt that society would kind of cure me in that way, and I at that point I was attending Smart Recovery meetings. Which again has that real harm minimization kind of bent to it. And I'd go to these meetings and you know, at that point I was still not drinking because I thought, you know, look, I'm gonna be sober until I know that I can drink like a normal person again. And so I was going to these smart recovery meetings and I'd see these people show up. And you know, there'd be the drunk guy who would get on the Zoom each week and he'd say how, oh, you know, I tried to have a couple of days off this week, but I didn't do it and I've been drinking every day. And I'd sit there and I'd think, like, I was insane, right? I was fully fucking insane. And I'd sit there and think, ah, oh, you poor bastard. Ah, oh, mate. Moderation's not for you, mate. Like, and you know, and I had no kind of self-awareness at that point. But yeah, the whole time I just kept thinking like, you know, I'll just keep going to work, and I even went to a couple of work functions where there was booze everywhere, and I drank my alcohol-free beer, and I was surprised that like no one noticed, no one seemed to give a shit, because I thought that was going to be a like, especially Australia's got such a massive drinking culture, as I'm sure Ireland does as well, but you know, so I was sure that everyone was going to be staring at me for being on the no alcohol beers, but no one gave a shit at all. But yeah, anyway, I just kept kind of thinking like, you know, one day I'll get around to drinking once I'm, you know, I'm confident in myself that I can do that. And then one day, like I was cleaning up the apartment and I'd had a whole bunch of like big Amazon boxes that I hadn't gone through. And I was opening one of them, and in there was this like super expensive bottle of scotch that I had bought. I'd must have bought like months ago and forgot about. And so I pulled it out and I was like, oh. And the thinking part of my brain was like, I should probably throw that out. But the other part of my brain was like, oh no, I'll save that for a special occasion. That'll be the whiskey that I have. Because I mean, you can't throw out a really expensive bottle of whiskey, and alcoholics don't drink really expensive whiskey. I mean, fucking hell, they drink, shit in paper bags. Not this. This is super fancy. So I put it up on my shelf, and I thought, yeah, like one day when the special time comes and I'm ready to be a moderate drinker again, I'll go for that bottle. And from that moment on, I just kept fucking thinking about it. It was just every day I was like, I think today's the day. Today must be the day. And it was just like, yeah, the fucking complete, like I'd be at work and I'd be thinking about that bottle back in my kitchen. Anyway, so all know how this story ends. One day I got home and it was a Wednesday or something, and so that was the special occasion. And so I opened it up, and I had, I had one glass that I was swirling around, and first of all, it hit me, fuck me, dead whiskey tastes disgusting. But like in my head, I was like, oh, I'm so sophisticated, I drink whiskey neat, but yeah, it was just awful. It tasted disgusting. But I still drank it, and then the next morning, like half the bottle was gone. And I didn't immediately fall back into drinking straight away, but within a couple of weeks, it was like I was drinking really heavily on the weekends again. And then we were getting close to Christmas, and I was going up to see my family for Christmas, and they're a bunch of piss heads. Mark, remind me that I said that. They're a bunch of piss heads. And so I was, I was, and so I thought, look, fuck it. When I go to Sydney, I'm just going to accept the fact that I'm like, the second I get on the plane, I'm going to start drinking, and I'm not going to stop until I get back on the plane home. And that's what I did. And I drank the whole time I was up in Christmas, up in Sydney for Christmas. And I was, no one really kind of noticed, because they're all piss heads, like I said. So, it's very, and Christmas time, it's really, really easy, as we have all just experienced, to be a full-blown alcoholic, and just no one notices because there are Christmas parties every day. And again, especially in Australia, drinking 15 beers on Christmas Day is considered normal. That's just like, we're a binge drinking nation. So anyway, yeah, so that was last Christmas, and I got back, and I'd been a total fucking nutcase in my job, and I'd known that. Like I said, like I, you know, even though I was sober for about 90% of the time that I was working there, I just knew that I must have been giving off like crazy person vibes. And so I got, at the start of the year, I got headhunted by this other company. And that classic kind of addicted thinking, I was like, well, yeah, this is fucking great. Like, I'll just take this new job where no one knows that I'm a nutcase. And that'll be great. That'll fix me. I thought the last job would fix me, but it didn't. But this new job certainly will fix me. So I took this new job, and I worked there for a couple of months. And again, I was completely sober for the first couple of months that I was there. But getting even more and more crazy, like just really, really nuts. Oh, there's my cat. And it all came to a head on Easter weekend. Yeah, fucking Catholics, eh? But yeah, it all came to a head, and I got super, super drunk one night, and just said a whole bunch of crazy stuff on Teams, on that chat program, and very quickly was out of that job. And because my family was in Sydney, no one knew at the time that I'd kind of lost my job, and I had enough money in the bank because they were paying me crazy well, that I could basically just, like, at that point I just thought, well, that's it, I'm done. I'm just going to drink myself to death. Like, I full on had that kind of leaving Las Vegas fucking mindset of like, well, that's it. This is, not long for this planet now. And so I was just kind of like, that's what I was doing. And I was, yeah, that was probably the darkest time of my life. And I, for weeks, months, actually, months, I did not leave the house at all. And every couple of days, an Uber Eats guy would come and drop off a bunch of beer and whiskey, or cigarettes. And I, it got to the point where, like, I was recognizing the drivers, and that was fucking embarrassing. But, like, I wouldn't even, at that point, I wouldn't even, I was so fucking ashamed. I wouldn't even look them in the eye. Like, you have to show your ID in this country, even if you look like me. And so when they'd show up, I'd just, like, hand my ID out the door, and then wait for them to kind of knock again to say that they had dropped off the drinks. And then I'd, bring the drinks in. And yeah, I wouldn't even make contact. I wouldn't even speak to them. And so, yeah, for months there, I wasn't even speaking to anyone, leaving the house, doing anything but smoking or drinking. And every now and again, and I was just like, it got to the point where I was just like, I had, like, a vomit bucket beside the couch that I'd use every couple of days. And it was so rote. Like, it was just so, such a kind of, oh, time for a vomit. And I'd lean over and vomit for a bit, and then, all right, get back to drinking. And then I'd be like, every couple of days I'd be like, fuck, I'm hungry. Jesus Christ. And so then I'd open up a Uber Eats and I'd scroll through to see when was the last time I had food delivered. And I'd scroll, 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 and be like, bottle shop, bottle shop, bottle shop, bottle shop, bottle shop. Oh, McDonald's. Oh, hang on. So that McDonald's was 6 days ago. So yeah, I probably should eat again. And that's how I was tracking, like, what my food was. So anyway, finally, one of someone in my sister gave me a call, and just kind of heard how fucking messed up I was, because I was just beyond the point of kind of hiding it at that point. And obviously she was really, really concerned. And she really begged me to go to a hospital. And funnily enough, at that point, I'd been to a hospital, to an emergency room, 3 times. Not by my own, never my own kind of reason. Basically, my neighbors kept putting in welfare checks because they'd hear me, like, crying or screaming or whatever. And so 3 different times I ended up in an emergency room, and 3 different times I waited for, like, 6 hours and hadn't been seen, and then just kind of wandered home. And I don't know, no one was out, no one noticed when I walked out of the emergency room, so I just went home. But yeah, my sister kept begging me to go to hospital. And my sister and my uncle, who I've never really been that close with, but, God bless him, he spent so many nights on the phone with me, just listening to my ridiculous fucking, whining and shit. And I mean, heart of gold, this guy. The amount of times I bought him shitless with, like, my drunken thoughts on the works of David Bowie, and, like, how it spoke to me, and fucking, oh, the poor guy. But anyway, they all listened and kept begging me to go to a hospital, and so I did. And yeah, this time I actually sat in the emergency room and I didn't leave. And eventually, they picked me up and took me to a psych ward, which was not something I had on my, to-do list. Yeah, no, it wasn't on my, vision board for the future. But so I went down there, and I mean, the nice thing was, I finally had a chance to kind of sober up and do that medically detox, because I'd sobered up a couple of times throughout that period, and every time, the full sweats and the physical side of things. But yeah, so it was a medically supervised detox, and then I kind of, found myself in this psych ward. And I used to be a journalist, and so, part of me immediately flipped to this like fucking journalism mode of like, oh, this will be an interesting story, and I started like, that was the way I detached myself of like, I'm not here because I'm a fucking I'm going through a mental breakdown. I'm here as an interesting fact-finding mission, And so I started like, paying attention to everything, and oh, this is interesting how they do this. And I was just fucking happy to be eating again, to be honest. Like, so yeah, they kept, they kept saying to me, like kept basically trying to kick me out, because I was too sane to be in the psych ward. But I was just like, look, you can't kick me out, because if I go out, I'm just fucked. Like, I'm gonna go back to my house, and I'm gonna keep drinking, and I'm fucked. And they, and so I just kept refusing to leave. And so I kept having these like different meetings with various psychiatrists from the hospital. And at one point, I'm sitting there with this and so, they did all these, tests and examinations, whatever, on me. And at one point, I'm there with the fucking head of psychiatry for this hospital, and I'm just begging him. I'm like, just tell me, like, give me a fucking diagnosis. What is wrong with me? Like, do I have bipolar? Am I a fucking narcissist? Am I like, oh, just give me a fucking thing that I can understand, because I'm insane. I'm clearly insane. And he was like, it says it on the piece of paper in your hand, Peter. And I pick it up, and it says, alcohol use disorder. And I was like, yeah, I know I drink, but that's because I'm insane. Like, tell me why I'm insane. And he's like, well, because you drink. You're drinking too much. Like, you'd be fine if you put the drink down. And I was so fucking in denial that I was like, no, there has to be something else. Like, what is it? What is it? Anyway, so, I went from there to this, like, they put me in this kind of like community house thing that was wonderful. Like, it was such a nice place. That had so much therapy, and really, really lovely people. When I was there, same thing. I kept begging them to tell me what was wrong with me, and they kept saying alcohol use disorder, and I kept thinking there must be something else. Anyway, so I got out. I finally got out. So by that stage, I'd been in a hospital or a halfway house for like 4 weeks, and sober for that whole 4 weeks. So yay. And I got home and remembered that there was still some weed in my bedroom. And I thought, well, they didn't say I had weed use disorder. So I started smoking weed straight away. And of course, within a couple of days, I was drinking again. And so yeah, 4 weeks of good work, pretty much down the toilet. But at least at that point, I had the kind of fucking, by that stage, I'd seen through my own bullshit. So it only took that time. It only took me 2 weeks to actually finally call some, put the wheels back in motion and go straight to a detox. And funnily enough, actually, the detox had a huge waiting list, because I don't have any insurance or anything. So yeah, using the public system, they had a huge wait list, And I was begging them. I was on the phone saying, "Look, no, I can't wait that long. Like, I'll be dead if I have to wait that long." And they said, "Well, you know, if you came from a psychiatric unit, you get in straight away." And I was like, "Great, thank you." And I hung up and I called up the psych ward again. And I said, "Hey guys, put a bed aside. I'm coming back." And so I went straight back to the psych ward and got in there and just went, "Yep." And you know, from the psych ward, I called back the detox and said, "Right, I'm in the psych ward now. You got to take me." And so they did. So anyway, yeah, I went to the detox. I'm going on way too long. Sorry about this. Yeah, got to the detox. And I had that same fucking freak out of like, but what am I going to do when, like, I'm great when I'm in these areas, when I'm supervised, but when I'm left to my own devices, I'm fucked. So I was terrified. And then when, you know, of course, when I was in there, the detox, it was purely just a place to dry out. So it wasn't, you know, there weren't a whole lot of activities or anything like that. But they did have visits from AA. And so yeah, so these AA people came along and I still hated AA with a passion. I still thought they were a bunch of crazy, you know, fundies from America. But they came along anyway, and I went to their presentation, and I got really, really pissed off at one point because I was like asking all these questions again. The journalist in me kind of jumped out, and I was, you know, what about this and what about that and blah, and I didn't feel that their answers were good enough, and especially like I had asked, well, what about the 13th step, like, and the person from AA was like, oh, I've never heard of that. And in my mind, I was like, fuck off, you haven't heard of the 13th step. I mean, like, I've seen a documentary called The 13th Step. There's a podcast called The 13th Step. Don't tell me you don't know about that. Anyway, so that was me being crazy and thinking, no, these guys are fucked. They can't even admit to their faults. But I was so, like, yeah, by the time I got home, I was just so strung out and I just did not want to have to go back to a psych ward and a detox. And I'd put my name down for a rehab, but again, being in the public system, I had to wait. I was on a 12-week wait list for that, and I thought, how the fuck am I going to survive 12 weeks? And for the first couple of days, I just spent the whole time under the doona. And I started watching a bunch of crap TV and just to get out of my head for a while. And then finally, I went to an AA meeting, and you know, I still don't. Oh, well, I still have issues with AA, but I have found that just getting to the meetings has been really, really good for me. And you know, and but God, there were some frustrating things. Those first couple of meetings, like, you know, I went to a bunch of, I hate the ID style meeting, even though, which is ironic because right now I guess I'm doing an ID. But yeah, I hated those ID meetings because they were just, you know, hearing the same old guy telling the same old story every week, was not for me. So I started going to these like beginner meetings and topic meetings and things. And for the beginner meetings, especially, every time I'd go there, like, you know, basically my question was, yeah, but what about the God thing? Like, you know, I'm agnostic. How do I get past the God thing? And what was so frustrating is like so many times I'd asked that question. I went to so many different meetings because I had been told by that person who came to the detox, like, please go to at least more than one meeting because I bet you'll hate your first one. So at least go to a second one before you give up. And so I thought, all right, I'll go shopping because I live in a big city, and you know, there were meetings just everywhere around me. So I thought, you know, look, I'll test out a bunch and I'll see which ones are aren't too crazy. And so I'd ask at these meetings, like, yeah, what about the God stuff? And they'd go, all right, yeah, cool. And you know, they'd ask other people in the room to answer that question. And I realized now that I've been there a while and I've seen other people ask the same question. The people they would ask, they would never ask the fucking atheist in the room or the agnostic in the room how they thought about it. They'd always ask someone who would say, well, I've always believed in God. And it's like, well, that's not helpful. Like, what I'm asking is, like, how, as a person who doesn't believe in God, how do I square that circle? And anyway, So yeah, I found though that there are in even in the most kind of religious AAs that I've been to, that there's always like the three or four secret agnostics or atheists in the room. And whenever I say something about not really believing in God all that much, someone will always come up to me and thank me afterwards. But I still do, yeah, I still do get kind of, like I said, I think there is something really, really important. As much as I love the Zooms, about that kind of human contact, that in-person contact. So I have continued to go to AAs, even though I disagree with a whole bunch of stuff. And yeah, I don't know. I still, you know, I still enjoy the cuppas and I still enjoy the chats. And what kept me sane for those first couple of weeks is I was going to a bunch of secular AA at the same time. But in Australia, there's only secular AA on Zoom. And so I was going to these secular AA meetings. But what I found for those were because Australia's so tiny and because AA is actually super tiny in Australia, like it's basically only American and Canadian, you know, the rest of the world couldn't give a fuck about AA. But yeah, so in Australia, it's a really, really small community. And so the secular version of AA is even tinier. And so it would be the same kind of faces. And it seemed to be, and it, you know, no offense to if someone is on the meeting here from secular AA in Australia, but it seemed to be like the meetings were all about not believing in God first and then recovery second. Like there was a lot of kind of like, you know, and I was doing it too, like a lot of bitching about the kind of fundamentalists within AA and then a little bit about recovery afterwards. And that's one of the reasons why I've really fallen in love with Thich Nhat, if I'm saying that correctly. And some of the secular ones from America, some of the secular meetings I've found in America as well. Just because, yeah, they seem to be less about, hey, we're atheists and we're proud. Like, great, that's fine. I'm not even an atheist. I'm a fucking agnostic. Like, that should not be a, you know, that's like piss weak atheism. Like, that shouldn't offend anyone. But you know, anyway, so I found that, yeah, the places that talk about recovery first, but without that need for the higher power so much, is kind of the place that I feel most comfortable. And from there, you know, I did finally get a copy of Staying Sober Without God. And you know, that even that title alone made me think, oh, this I bet you this is going to be like hardcore atheist. But it's not. It's basically, if you haven't read Staying Sober Without God, it's fucking what the big book should be in 2023. Like, it's just, you know, the big book, the 12 steps, as written by a psychologist, who doesn't think that you need to believe in a God to get sober. Like, how is that a groundbreaking, you know, scary thought? So yeah, so I've really, really enjoyed that. And I'm doing these steps and I'm up to step nine. And you know, I've been completely open with my sponsor, who is, you know, traditional AA. He's very much, he definitely believes in a higher power, but he is cool with me not having one, or not, at least not knowing what the fuck, if I, you know, like I'm an agnostic. Again, it's not like I don't hate the idea of God. I just don't know if there is one. And he's totally cool with that. And he knows that I'm using secular texts and not the big book, and he's supportive if that with that. And so that's really, really, really good for me. And so yeah, I found this weird kind of niche for me. Like I still feel it's a little bit weird. Like I feel that AA still has this kind of like don't ask, don't tell when it comes to, you know, atheism or agnosticism, which is just really disappointing in the year 2023. But it is what it is. And, you know, I still show up. I still drink the tea. I still get the hugs and I still eat the Tim Tams. And that for me is what I get out of the in-person AA. I was supposed to talk about some more film and TV, and I can see I'm almost out of time. So I'm just going to quickly mention Single Drunk Female, I think, did more to get me in the rooms than anything else. It's such a wonderful show. It made the New York Times best TV for 2023. So, of course, it got fucking cancelled. So it only had two seasons before it got cancelled. But it is absolutely wonderful. And because it got cancelled, you can't even stream it anymore. Disney has taken it off their streaming channels. So you have my permission to steal it. So steal it from wherever you steal good TV. It is wonderful. It is such a such a lo lovely way of looking at recovery. And I'd highly recommend that. There's also a show called The Dry, which is an Irish comedy about a woman who moves back to Ireland from London, and her trying to find her way in AA. It's not as polished as Single Drunk Female, and the plot points are probably a bit more obvious, but especially if you like, what I think it does really, really well is it gets that uncomfortableness of like being the one sober person in a family full of piss heads. It does that really, really well, of like everyone else kind of eggshelling around you of like, fuck, are we allowed to drink in front of you? Yeah, you're allowed to drink in front of me, it's fine. So yeah, it does that really, really well, and it's quite lovely. So I'd check that out. And the other TV that just got me through my darkest time, nothing to do with recovery at all, but Superstore is on Netflix. It's fucking lovely. It is just so wonderful. It's surprising how lovely and pro-union and progressive it is for a show from America. No offense to Americans. And also Our Flag Means Death, which is just the sweetest little thing. And you know, I cried at so many episodes of that, even though it's a comedy. It's fucking wonderful. And it has a lot to do with kind of, you know, past trauma and getting over trauma and stuff like that. So anyway, yeah, I think I didn't even get through my apps, but whatever. Look, I absolutely love Staying Sober Without God. I read Beyond Belief every morning. I do use a gratitude I have a gratitude app that I do my gratitude list every night, and that I really do think is helpful, especially if your brain is just only seeing negatives for a while, just to you know, spend some time each night writing out some positives is a li really lovely way to kind of set your mind straight before you go to bed. And I have been using Insight Timer, which is on Android and iOS and is free. And there are some really great meditations in there for meditations about staying sober that are quite helpful to listen to. And I just listen to ones that are like positive affirmations to go to sleep to at night. Just a hint on that one, if you find a positive affirmation that you like, listen to the same one every night for a couple of nights, and then you'll fall asleep immediately because your brain will start hearing that and going, oh, I fall asleep to this, and you'll fall asleep to it. So anyway, there's some things that have gotten me through this now 134 days of sobriety in my current streak. So fuck, I've talked for a while. Sorry about that. But yeah, Mark, how you doing?